The headlines: the United States rejects a Poland offer to send fighter jets to Ukraine via an American airbase, saying it raises serious concerns for NATO. A report says Saudi and Emirati leaders declined calls with the U.S. president as Washington is working to build international support for Ukraine and contain a surge in oil prices. South Koreans are voting for a new president in a race branded by local media as the election of the unfavorables. Our top story for this half hour: Washington says no to an offer by Warsaw to transfer Poland-owned fighter jets to Ukraine through U.S. airbase. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby believes Poland's offer is not a tenable one. He says Warsaw is the party to decide whether it wants to send its own jets to Ukraine, and the transferring the jets via U.S. NATO airbase in exchange for American fighter aircraft would raise serious concerns for the military alliance. The Polish Foreign Ministry has proposed that its entire fleet of Soviet-era MiG and Sukhoi fighter jets be immediately sent to Ukraine through an airbase inside Germany. In return, Warsaw has asked Washington to provide it with used aircraft with the same operational capabilities. The move could increase tensions with Russia because it has warned that sending weapons to Ukraine could lead to a global collapse. Only days after Russia said that Kiev is eliminating traces of its biological weapons program, here's an acknowledgement from a U.S. official that Ukraine has indeed been housing biological research facilities.
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces.
Russian authorities said on Monday that Ukraine has established more than 30 biological laboratories on its territory at the request of the U.S. Reacting to the news, China is now urging Washington to release all details of the programs. Beijing wants the relevant parties to ensure the safety of the laboratories. Referring to the U.S. activities in Ukraine, the Chinese Foreign Ministry said it's only the tip of the iceberg. Earlier, the U.K. Defense Ministry refuted Moscow's claims, saying they're only meant to justify the military operation. U.S. media reporting that Saudi and Emirati leaders have snubbed President Joe Biden and refused to speak to him in recent weeks. According to the Wall Street Journal, there has been some expectation of a phone call after earlier contacts by the White House were declined, but that those calls never came. Biden was apparently meaning to encourage the two Arab producers to pump more oil into the market to bring down energy prices in the U.S. Washington has been attempting to push an array of oil-producing countries, including its adversary Venezuela, to balance the impact of Russia's Ukraine attack on energy markets. The U.S. president is reportedly considering a trip to Saudi Arabia to resolve differences with Crown Prince bin Salman over a host of issues. Gas prices in the U.S. Hit an all-time high as President Joe Biden announces a full ban on energy supplies from Russia. Americans now have to pay an average of almost $4.2 per gallon at the gas pump, surpassing the previous high in 2008. And now, with U.S. President Biden's ban on Russian oil and gas imports taking effect, the prices are expected to go up even more steeply. Russia exports more than 12% of the world's crude oil. Any supply disruption will affect the cost of oil globally. American households are also grappling with the highest inflation rate in over 40 years. The United States has just banned Russian energy imports, but a whirlwind diplomatic tour by its Secretary of State has failed to convince Europe to do the same. The U.S. is pushing NATO members to send fighter jets to Ukraine, which many fear will deteriorate the situation. Rami Mazahedi has more on the story.
United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken wrapped up a visit to the leaders of six European nations, plus a visit with the European Union and Israel's foreign minister, with a closed-door meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron. Washington has just announced a ban on Russian fossil fuels, but Blinken has apparently not convinced the European Union to immediately sever energy ties with their primary supplier. Russia announced they would cut its oil supplies to Europe if they introduced energy sanctions, which would have a devastating economic impact, perhaps globally. In what many say is an effort to avoid peace and increase the likelihood of a major war, Blinken recently announced that NATO members can send fighter jets to Ukraine. The U.S. and Europe have already provided significant military aid to Ukraine and imposed sanctions so potentially sweeping that Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin recently said they were, quote, like a war.
France is not directly concerned in this conflict, and yet they've already overdone it. When their foreign minister declared an all-out economic and financial war against Russia, that is an act of war. However, there's no economic coherence here because Europe completely depends on Russia for gas, petrol, and titanium, while the loss of export sales to Russia would be a catastrophe for European agriculture.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky recently announced that he, quote, understood that NATO is not prepared to accept Ukraine, end quote, which appears to be a concession to one of Russia's primary demands to end its military operation. The risk of expanding the conflict is a major concern, and with Washington giving Russia a cold shoulder since their offensive, Macron has served as the West's primary mediator with Moscow.
Macron has failed in his mediations because he and Germany have not been able to convince Ukraine to respect the Minsk agreements. If Macron had been able to convince Ukraine of this, then things could have been quite different. France should have been able to achieve this, but the United States obviously didn't want it.
Since 2014, some 14,000 people have been killed in Ukraine. Russia's offensive on February 24th has produced almost 500 civilian deaths and nearly 2 million refugees, according to the United Nations. In recent years, many politicians have argued that the European Union is necessary in order to have peace on the continent. However, forming an EU army, sending arms within Europe, and waging a sanctions war which is sure to hurt the Russian people doesn't seem peaceful to many. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Italy's energy minister has announced the country can cope without Russian gas even if Moscow suddenly cuts off its gas supplies. Meanwhile, the EU has published plans to slash its imports of Russian gas by two-thirds this year. Max Reilly has more in this report.
As the Russian-Ukrainian conflict gets more bellicose by the day, European countries are trying to find ways to free themselves from Russian gas dependency. Italy has been importing gas from Russia for over 50 years. Its gas imports from Moscow currently stands at about 40% of its total demand. However, Energy Minister Roberto Cingolani said on Tuesday that Rome can cope without Russian gas should President Vladimir Putin decide to halt supplies in retaliation to sanctions and arms sales to Ukraine.
Why has Russian gas served us well for decades? Because it is very convenient. The gas is relatively cheap, of high quality, and it runs through an old pipeline that was paid off long ago. In 1994, Italy used to produce about 30 billion cubic meters of gas. Now it only produces one-tenth of that.
Italy ponders over a new energy strategy which includes building liquefied natural gas terminals, increasing its regasification capacity, and being less dependent on gas pipelines. The Italian government believes it might take 24 to 30 months to achieve its ends. This, as the European Union has rolled out plans to considerably cut its import of Russian gas in 2022. EU published plans on Tuesday aiming to slash Russian gas dependence by two-thirds by the end of this year. The bloc imported 155 billion cubic meters of natural gas from Russia last year, which equals to almost half of its gas imports.
Sarebbe un bel problema.
Should Russia cut off gas supplies to Europe, it would be a big mess. There is no way Brussels would be able to replace such a big gas supplier in a short time. It's great that the EU has outlined state aid for struggling companies across Europe. Energy bills are 3-4 times more expensive than before. For over 20 years, we've been saying to governments that energy diversification was the way to go, but we were seen as fools. I think Qatar and Iran can be among the new gas suppliers for us.
The EU intends to create its own energy resources by accelerating the rollout of renewable energy, biofuels and hydrogen. However, for the time being and the immediate future, Brussels will have to find new sources of gas and commit to lowering energy consumption by cutting energy use. Max Civili, Rome.
South Koreans are going to the polls to elect their 20th president in a race branded by the media as the election of the unfavorables. From the 14 registered candidates, the two leading ones are Lee Jae-myung, who represents the ruling Democratic Party, and Yoon Suk-yeol from the conservative main opposition People Power Party. Both candidates were running neck to neck in the latest polls, but scandals and accusations of corruption have left them largely unpopular. Whoever gets elected will replace incumbent President Moon Jae-in for a 5-year term. Younger voters are said to have a pivotal role to play in this election. Soaring housing prices and inequalities, the COVID pandemic, unemployment, and anxiety over North Korea are the main challenges for the new administration. Frank Smith is joining us now from Seoul. Frank, please bring us up to speed on the latest details regarding the polls. And if you can, please explain why this election is being called the election of the unfavorables.
Well, let's start off with how voting is going so far. Early ballots cast reached record right now as eligible voters had cast their ballots, and that's a record level for that time. Also, polls are going to be extended from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. to allow those about a million or so South Koreans that are currently suffering or self-isolated with COVID-19. There were some irregularities with those early voters, though, with the campaign officials taking the ballots of people that have COVID-19 and placing them, according to reports, in garbage bags, and some people getting ballot envelopes that already had filled in ballots in them and mishandling them because they didn't want the COVID-19 patients to put their ballots directly into the ballot boxes. So they have organized some other remedies for that for Election Day, having separate waiting areas for COVID-19 patients and allowing them to put their ballots directly into the boxes. But you know, this really promises to be a highly contentious vote, not just because of these irregularities, but as you mentioned, because of the kind of unpopularity of the two candidates. Yoon Suk-yeol has been accused of being a misogynist. He's, tainted by scandal himself with his wife apparently plagiarizing or using fraudulent information and job applications, and Lee Jae-myung being connected to a real estate scandal when he was mayor of Songnam City, just south of Seoul. So, you know, these two candidates are certainly kind of unpopular, and that may be what's driving out the high voting rate today.
And Frank, if you can also tell us some about the challenges that a new government will face in South Korea.
Well, today, they just announced the COVID-19 pandemic reaching a record level of 340,000 people. That's in a total population of 52 million. 340,000 people have been found to have contracted COVID-19 in the last 24-hour period, with a record 159 deaths, now approaching 10,000 casualties here in South Korea, which had dealt so well with the pandemic early on. So the incumbent, the next president of South Korea, is going to have some real challenges ahead of him getting past the COVID-19 pandemic, and also addressing the geopolitical challenges South Korea faces with the war in Ukraine, as South Korea is a large energy importer. Almost 100% of its energy is imported, and those costs are going to go up, and that's going to affect the South Korean economy. So some serious challenges on those two fronts, as well as the issues that we've already mentioned, housing and inequality, and also for young people, jobs. Youth here represent a real swing vote, as they lowered the voting age from 19 to 18. And as well, we have 5 years since the previous election. So a lot of new voters and a lot of kind of uncertainty with this election really up for grabs here.
All right, thanks a lot. Frank Smith joining us from Seoul. Elsewhere, another Palestinian has lost his life following an attack by the Israeli forces as tensions run high in the occupied territories. Palestinian sources say the 23-year-old man succumbed to his injuries sustained in an attack by troops in the city of Nablus a few days ago. The West Bank has been the scene of daily escalations, with Israeli forces killing several Palestinians within days. The UN Special Coordinator for the Middle East peace process has expressed deep concern over the deteriorating security situation. Iran strongly condemns the latest Israeli missile strike against Syria as a criminal act of aggression, occupation, and assassination. Foreign Ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh says responding to the regime's crimes against humanity is one of the main goals of the resistance campaign in the region. Israeli airstrikes hit targets near the Syrian capital, Damascus, on Monday. During that attack, two members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps were killed. The IRGC has vowed to avenge the death of its members. In a statement, it said the Zionist regime will undoubtedly pay the price for its atrocity. There are a number of Iranian military advisors in Syria, as requested by the Damascus government. Carrying attacks on Syrian territory has become a common Israeli practice. The Syrian government has on numerous occasions asked the United Nations to hold Tel Aviv accountable for its continued aggression. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Iranian Radio. Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
see you too.
2 months.
2 months. Yanni?
Bazaar. If the last 40,000 years have been a methodical climb for information and communication technology, or ICT, then the last 30 years have been a sprint. ICT is the world's fastest growing economic activity. The sector has turned the globe into an increasingly interconnected network of individuals, firms, schools, and governments. They all communicate and interact with each other through a variety of channels, providing economic opportunities transcending borders, languages, and cultures. ICT forms the basis for most advances in almost all aspects of our modern world, including manufacturing technologies. It is considered to be key for advanced manufacturing strategy. Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In this show, we will look at Iran's information and communication technology sector. Products of this industry are all around us, which have helped us perform many of our daily tasks more efficiently while saving valuable time. We wanted to explore its role in economic growth and discover how its products are facilitating a shift towards a knowledge-based economy. Our journey this time took us to a company that originated in the capital city of Tehran and now provides services across the country. ITOL was established a couple of years ago and has since rapidly expanded its scope of services. It has developed an online platform that consolidates multiple vendors to provide services needed by vehicle owners. In the past, car owners had to physically go to various administrations to change license plates, get insurance, or pay fines. Each one of these tasks required going to a different service provider and often involved lengthy waits and lots of bureaucracy. This company reimagined the way people take care of their vehicle needs. Now, all these tasks are easier to complete with the use of a single website. For example, one particular service which is quite handy for car owners is the impound release service. Getting your car back from impoundment isn't fun. You will often need to gather lots of paperwork and pay some hefty fees. But probably the most difficult step is locating the vehicle itself. This is actually more difficult than one might think. This company offers a unique service for a situation like this. After the car owner enters the basic vehicle information on the website, they have the option to hire an agent. Upon receiving express permission from the car owner, the agent then will carry out all tasks of getting the car back from impoundment. The age of digital technology has brought everything to our fingertips. Such technology has saved us valuable resources and numerous headaches. It has helped us become more productive with the efficient use of our time, freeing up busy schedules for other activities. ICT has also opened new channels for service delivery in areas such as e-government, education, e-health, and information distribution. There are several websites and places where an individual can search to find that perfect car to buy. Not to mention there are numerous areas to shop around for vehicle insurance. But never before have they been found in one place. So one of the competitive advantages of this business is its expansive range of services offered through a single platform. Being resilient and adaptable has been key to managing the fallout of the COVID-19 crisis. During the coronavirus pandemic, more and more people turned to the internet to meet their vehicle needs as many areas began restricting in-person services. This company offered a valuable service during that period, and currently, its platform has around 20 million users. The services provided by this platform are certified through various government departments and municipalities. And as such, this company is regulated by these entities as well. It has also received its operation permits from the Center for Information Technology and Digital Media under the Ministry of Culture and Labor. As part of its future vision, this business is planning to increase its services with its development strategy. The biggest asset of this company is its human resources, which employs specialist and experienced personnel in the field of information and communication technology. Plus, it has dozens of expert consultants for various fieldwork tasks. Currently, roughly 80 people work at its company. The company we just mentioned is only a small part of the massive information communication technology network in Iran. This sector is increasingly viewed as a resource to improve productivity and efficiency, leading to economic growth. The Iranian economy has benefited greatly from ICT application over the years. Now, you might be wondering what these technologies are and what they do. In a nutshell, these technologies all deal with the transmission or reception of information of some kind. It's a blanket term that broadly covers tech and services involved in computing, data management, telecommunications provision, and of course, the internet. Some of these technologies are software that is used in factories to manage productions. In fact, ICT plays a vital role in manufacturing industry's competence, competitiveness, and production processes. Still, other ICT examples can be hardware and necessary infrastructure product like fiber optic cables and the like. The government began privatizing this sector in the 1990s. Presently, most of the sector is privatized by operators competing in the mobile telephone, data services, and internet sectors. In 2013, the share of ICT in the economy was roughly 1.5%. Since then, policymakers have been keen on developing the sector by targeting ICT infrastructure in the 7th development plan ending in 2025. Included in the future plan are increasing household broadband internet access, especially in rural areas, and delivery of all government services through e-government. ICT has many uses, but probably the biggest use is to facilitate internet flow nationwide. Internet is one of the easiest ways to transmit information, whether it is through e-commerce, creating platforms to increase access to services, and so much more. During the coronavirus pandemic, many processes, including education, were made easier by using the internet. According to statistics from the National Communications Regulation Organization, currently, there are somewhere around 80 million internet subscribers in the country. This roughly breaks down to 70 million mobile subscriptions, while 9 million use broadband connections. The users of fixed broadband are mainly businesses and government entities. We have studied a report released in 2019 by the E-commerce Development Center of Iran to get more insight. Figures showed there were some 270,000 e-commerce businesses in the country. Statistics in the report also indicated that 13% of these businesses were owned by women nationwide. The center puts the total transactions from e-commerce businesses alone at around $1 billion in 2019. Archaeologists discovered one of the oldest medical devices dating back 9,000 years ago. The device is a flint-tip drill and bowstrings used by Neolithic dentists in the Balochistan area of Pakistan. Nowadays, medical devices are far more advanced but carry the same importance in healthcare. innovative products can replace, repair, and sustain failing body functions. These items can also have intelligence that allows health practitioners to remotely monitor a patient's conditions. Today, thanks to technology, there are more accessible treatments for a wide variety of diseases with more efficient care for the sick person. This time, we're going to check out the contributions of knowledge-based companies to the health sector. We wanted to see what types of products are made, plus we will briefly touch on what goes into making medical devices that save the lives of people, especially during the pandemic. Let's start the show. To familiarize ourselves with medical device production, we visited a knowledge-based company that specializes in making advanced technology for hospitals and clinics. پویندگان راه سعادت was first established nearly 3 decades ago and has been actively producing products in 7 categories. Its products are used to monitor health or treat critically ill patients in hospitals. Among its achievements, one can name the 247 plan in collaboration with the Ministry of Health. This was a program that connects ambulances carrying patients to hospital emergency rooms. This knowledge-based company designed a portable cardiograph machine that is carried on ambulances. The advantage of these devices is they can save sensitive heart images. The information is sent directly to the emergency room for analysis as the patient is on their way. Plus, the device can receive calls and medical doctors can speak with patients and provide on-the-spot instructions. Such a system has saved thousands of lives. The research and development department holds the pulse of this company. Here, quality control checks are carried and standardization criteria are implemented. It is also where new products are born. Among its hundreds of employees, this company uses the knowledge and expertise of a slew of various engineers to make advanced products from seemingly simple ideas. Medical devices are a fundamental part of healthcare systems. They are essential to prevent, diagnose, treat, and rehabilitate illnesses and diseases safely and effectively. Because they deal with human life, these items need to always be dependable, safe, and accurate with zero failure. That is why medical devices must follow extremely strict standards for production and also performance. Some 20 years ago, this company obtained EU standardization licenses and has since produced its products along with European standards. It also adheres to the strict requirements of the Ministry of Health and the National Medical Device Directorate. This company has massive production halls that are closely monitored. The processes of quality control checks are taken very seriously as these tests ensure the high quality of products made in this place. Each component of any device is checked for quality before it is even applied. All stages of production are continuously examined and tested to ensure the final assembly produces the best outcome. But that's not where quality control stops. The final products are also tested and examined for accurate performance. It might be interesting to know that this company has been exporting its products to dozens of countries around the globe. This knowledge-based business has never stopped looking to the future. As part of its vision, it plans to develop its products to increase its capabilities and diversity. Moreover, it plans on increasing its export reach. As with any business when starting out, there are always challenges to overcome, and one of the hurdles for this company was the US-imposed economic sanctions. But instead of allowing the sanctions to become a thorn in its side, this company turned it into an opportunity for growth.
Over the past two decades, Iran has taken huge strides in the health and medical sector. In fact, Iran's medical device market is growing at a rate that is above the world average. The country is globally ranked fourth for engineering over 1,000 of its medical devices to show for it. This technological capacity has allowed the country to churn out advanced machinery used in the medical sector.
Out of the 1,000 medical device manufacturers in the country, nearly 230 of them are knowledge-based firms. These manufacturers generate some 30% of revenues in medical device market. That's based on statistics from the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology of Iran. Going off the figures from the Medical Equipment Office at the Ministry of Health, over 2,000 different types of medical devices are domestically produced in the country. All of these products meet EU standardization requirements. To get a better idea of just how advanced this sector really is, we looked at some data from the National Medical Device Directorate. Figures showed that over half of the 500,000 medical devices made globally have Iranian versions. Domestic medical device production has developed by leaps and bounds since 2019. Productions have reduced imports by 10%. Meanwhile, exports of these items have also increased by 10% over the last 3 years. These figures come from the Medical Equipment Office of the Ministry of Health. The National Medical Device Directorate said Iran's medical device productions were worth nearly $3 billion in 2018. Current official figures have not been made public yet, but industry participants predict Iran's share of this market will be roughly $7 billion by 2025.
The significant progress in medical device production has been largely due to government support for manufacturers and knowledge-based companies. Knowledge-based companies are peeling away the fingers of the U.S. monopoly on medical equipment and pharmaceuticals by manufacturing sanctioned items. Doing so has reduced imports and saved the country large amounts of foreign currency while meeting domestic needs.
The U.S. government claims that the sanctions do not include medicine and medical equipment. But sanctions have made it virtually impossible for Iran to import vital medicine and medical devices. During tough times, at the start of the coronavirus pandemic, the Ministry of Health turned to knowledge-based companies for much-needed innovations to save people's lives. Companies, like the one we mentioned earlier, stepped up to the plate and began manufacturing items like ventilators. Since the beginning of the outbreak, domestic firms have been making testing kits, vaccines, medicine, and other strategic products. Currently, 5 coronavirus vaccines have been domestically manufactured, all of which have completed required clinical trials and are offered to the public after being approved by the Health Ministry. Iran is one of the few countries in the world that has the capabilities to produce vaccines. Not only has Iran fully met the country's needs, but it also has the capacity to export COVID-19-related treatments and testing products.
All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear colleague and friend who has prepared an interesting feature for you. Let's go check it out.
Anu Game Studio's primary activities were providing art services for different companies. These services including providing art assets and indie PC games for other companies, and after a short time its office opened, and in 2008 the studio made its own game. Anu Game Studio has reached many honors in Iran's game industry. It is one of the biggest companies in this field. Due to its economic activities, it was introduced as a knowledge-based company in 2017 by the presidential organization and based its goals on this subject. Video games are among the most popular hobbies of Iranian youth. Iranian gamers play an average 93 minutes a day, and about half of them play every day. Revenue in the video game segment is projected to reach $701 million in 2022. The company's main goal is to make high-quality video games for different platforms by gathering together professional staff in various fields of the game industry. They work tirelessly to keep the quality of their games standard in all parts, including game design, graphics, programming, and so forth. According to a September report by the Iran Computer and Video Games Foundation, there were at least 32 million gamers among Iran's population of 80 million, and that number is growing every day. Industry insiders say that with the increasing number of gamers in Iran, domestic video game companies are growing constantly. Currently, Iran has over 150 game development companies. The gaming industry has seen rapid developments and grown from $59 billion to a staggering $160 billion back in 2020. The global gaming industry is now worth more than $300 billion. There are 2.9 billion players active worldwide. The trend seems to be growing and taking the gaming sector to new highs, making it one of the most lucrative industries on the planet.
Almost out of time for this program, but before we go, let's briefly check out some news and trends in the ICT sector. As the pandemic is more or less under control, Iran is gearing up to welcome tourists again with the help of virtual and augmented reality services.
Five Iranian knowledge-based companies have been working on these services to promote inbound tourism. They have successfully developed platforms for virtual tours of museums and historical sites and so much more. One platform incorporates augmented reality, which reconstructs Persepolis, allowing its users to visit the landmark using their smartphones or tablets.
If you are interested in the goings-on of the stock market, this next bit of news is just for you. Several startups developed in the ICT sector are planning to go public and offer their shares in the stock market.
Startups in cap-hailing services, popular video-on-demand platforms, and Iran's largest Android app store, among many more, have all applied. Previously, many startups wanting to join Bourse have been facing obstacles. However, Iran Farah Bourse has removed some of these barriers, making it easier for them to offer shares. It has set up a special framework that requires startups to share mutual funds instead of the popular book building method. The government has been supporting tech firms and startups aiming at further developing the tech ecosystem.
That covers our program on information communications technologies and their markets in the country. Don't forget to leave us your feedback. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zayed Al Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Just a reminder that we're on the subject of the social system in Islam, and we've covered a variety of topics. Now we're going to enter into the topic of the economic system in Islam. And Islam really does have a lot to say about the iqtisadi side, the economic side of our religion as Muslims. And although you have most probably heard of the very famous book by the late Shaheed Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr rahmatullahi alayh, called Iqtisaduna, or Our Economics, and alhamdulillah it has been translated into English, but that is indeed a very difficult book, probably for someone who isn't familiar with the subject of economics and the different theories that are around there. But what we can see that it's a good thing for us to try to have an understanding as to what Islam says about finances, about money, about the economical side of a society, and the importance of money and wealth as well. Some of us might believe that because Islam is so against us being involved in materialism and engrossed or obsessed with the dunya, it also means that we should not be interested in money or accumulating of money, or not even be among those who go after or pursue any kind of wealth or money. We will see from what it is that Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli has to say that it is completely the opposite case. And also, Sheikh Jawadi Amuli mentions a variety of verses and also a hadith from Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam that I will be sharing with you as well. And the first point that he does make is the importance of money and wealth. So in the economic system of Islam, money and wealth is seen as a ni'mah, as a blessing, something that will be the foundation of a society. It is pretty much the backbone of a community, money and wealth and things like that.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Wealth, because any kind of revolution, any kind of change, any kind of resistance movement needs money. And when Islam first started, it wasn't a revolution or a resistance or anything else. It was introducing a religion to the people of Mecca. But that, of course, led to all of the issues and the battles and the wars and things like that that occurred later on. Which is why Khadija salamullahi alayha played a pivotal role in that era. And then, of course, Imam Ali salamullahi alayhi and him being the brave warrior that was able to defend Islam. And so money is something important. When you have a poor person, you've pretty much removed that backbone that he is going to be depending on, that he's going to be standing with. And that's why it is referred to as that the pillar of a society, the foundation, what is going to bring about that sense of not only honor, but also independence. You know, when you have enough wealth and money, you are free to do as you wish. You are independent. You are not going to be subjugated to the wills or the requirements or the demands of someone else. You're also not going to feel that level of humility. And of course, we must remember also that when it does come to how a person is able to survive, when there's the issue of sanctions or when there are issues of boycott, and you do remember the story of Shi'ab Abi Talib, in where not only did Abu Talib radiallahu ta'ala anhu pass away, but so did Sayyidah Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha as well. And that's why Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi called that year Amul Huzn, the year of grief. And this was when they were in the valley of Abu Talib and the people of Quraysh were boycotting them. So placing sanctions on a society will cripple that society. But if they have that independence, then they're not going to have any issues. And that's why there's a very interesting verse in the Holy Quran that speaks about this in Surah Al-Nisa, verse number 5, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, in talking about power and talking about being independent and talking about having that sovereign kind of nation, if we could say, he says, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, أَمْوَالُكُمْ أَلَّتِي جَعَلَ اللَّهُ لَكُمْ قِيَامًا. Your money that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has placed it as qiyam for you. Now, what does the word qiyam here mean? Here, we can understand that qiyam is a means to hold up and secure the society. It's a way of supporting and managing the society. So that level of qaymuma and support and managing can only occur when there is money there to be spent. And that's why on the other side, we can understand that it's very bad for one to rely on people who squander, on people who are stingy, on people who are not wise when it comes to spending, people who are what we call safih, or reckless, careless. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi at-tahirin.
Driving past walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children's cries.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.